Hello and welcome to ICTJ's special podcast series on truth commissions and peace processes. Today we're speaking with Mr. Jean Arnaud, who is a visiting senior fellow at the Center on International Cooperation at New York University, as well as a distinguished professor of practice at the Paris School of International Affairs at Sciences Po, Paris. He was formerly a special representative of the Secretary General for Guatemala and head of the UN Verification Mission in Guatemala from 1997 to 2000. He was then an observer and a mediator in the Guatemala peace negotiations, as well as serving as senior political affairs officer in Namibia, Afghanistan, and Western Sahara. Mr. Arnaud, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Sure.
Guatemala continues to struggle with the legacy of widespread violence after the Civil War, which includes deep societal divisions, continued discrimination, racism, and weak state institutions. You were in Guatemala for the negotiations to end the conflict. Is there anything that you would have done differently there looking back at that time?
That is a very good and difficult question. Most of the things we do as mediators are usually essentially it's an answer to a problem. It's true that mediators have some leeway to shape the outcome of any peace process. But first, they are constrained by one essential point of view in mediation, which is consent. In other words, you can try to introduce elements, take elements out, but at the same time, at the end of the day, the outcome is an outcome that has to enjoy consent by both sides. And the second thing is that ultimately, the authority of a mediator depends essentially on its ability to solve a problem rather than the advice that you can give, even though, you know, advices can be sometimes accepted. But as someone said, people tend to prefer their ideas to yours. And as a result, where a mediator is usually most effective is when there is, in fact, a problem to which the mediator can offer a solution. So between the need for consent and the need to maintain an authority based on problem solving, there is, in fact, I would say, a great deal of what comes out of the peace process that is completely specific to the context of what the market can bear in terms of what the parties can accept, and the context in terms of what problems are raised during the negotiations, which the mediator can address with creativity as much as possible. So that's a little bit to counter a little bit the idea that the mediator enters a peace process and then starts moving things right and left, depending on his views or depending on an own agenda. This being said, and it's a long introduction to say that, yes, I think if I look now at Guatemala 20 years later, there's no question in my view that somehow a big space was left empty. And that's the space of national reconciliation. And when I say national reconciliation, I don't mean everybody's going to be living happily ever after. A war is a competition. Normal politics is also competition. Competition means that there will be clash and conflict and so on and so forth. So I think we have to accept that after a long war, you will continue to have differences and fractures and people representing different views. But as you said, if you arrive in Guatemala today, one thing that will certainly strike you is the fact that I would say polarization rather than decreasing has maybe even increased compared to where we were around the final years of the peace process. And I think the responsibility for that polarization partly rests with the fact that, frankly, the negotiators, including yours truly, never really thought that this was a subject. Somehow the Truth Commission was delegated the task of addressing these issues. Somehow the reparation program was delegated in terms of filling that space. With benefit of hindsight, I think that there was clearly something that both belligerents had to do to address the lingering polarization within society at large. The army and the governments would have to be much more forceful in engaging with civil society, with associations of victims, so that the issue of redressing the wrongs of the past should not appear as merely an institutional issue. should not appear as being the job of a commission, should appear to be what in fact it is, also an issue of restoring human relations, of trying to engage in something that carries a little bit more, actually much more, than just an issue of institution, truth and facts. And in a similar way, I think that it would have been incumbent on the guerrilla to address these issues in the knowledge that the peace process left inside the body politic, you know, mined with delayed action, and that neither the Truth Commission nor subsequent implementation of various reforms have really addressed the problem of the potential resurgence of polarization, which I think is partly, not only, I'm sure that there are probably many other things that should have been done, but I think partly this issue should have been addressed through a real engagement by the belligerents towards society at large.
Part of the discussion at the symposium is looking at lessons learned and how many lessons learned can we really draw from these past experiences. As you are now, what lessons would you say you can take away either from this particular event or over the course of your career about the role of truth-seeking and the peace process itself?
Look, on truth-seeking, I think that one critical issue, in my view, is whether or not during the war, a real national demand has emerged. Because I think it's extremely difficult to impose a truth-seeking exercise on a situation where, in fact, that demand is not there. And I was saying at the meeting this morning that one of the problems I had with, let's say, the mechanical application of the truth-seeking, or the Truth Commission template to Afghanistan, is that during the 3 or 4 years that I was there, I had never had an elder or people coming up to us and saying, you know, this is a very important issue. A fundamental principle is to make sure when you want to try to draw general conclusions from successes or failures is whether at the end of the day these respond to domestic demands or whether they do not. And I think that one has to be very careful with this, because I think if you try to impose a mechanism on the assumption that there is a demand, and in fact there is no demand, you may face perversive consequences. So that's the first point. On this issue of, you know, if I look across the past 20 years, I would say Truth Commission have been of great help wherever there was a popular demand for this. I remember there's a chapter in Desmond Tutu's book about the experience of the Truth Commission in South Africa, where he's addressing the issue of reconciliation. And he says, look, you can forget reconciliation if the peace process does not deliver dividends in terms of improving people's lives. And I'm deeply, deeply convinced that if I look at most peace processes 20 years later, they have secured peace in most cases, fairly stable in many cases. But one thing that most of these processes have not delivered is social economic peace dividends. In fact, you look at all the countries that went through these processes back in the early 90s, and you find out that there may be, actually, at the end of the day, a sort of democratic process with regular elections. You will see that institutions may have, well, first, they have usually demilitarized, so it's a little bit more civilian. But one area where I suspect that most of these processes failed is precisely in terms of lifting poverty, lifting people out of poverty and extreme poverty. And I think at the end of the day, without lifting people out of poverty, without improving their daily life, you may have a durable peace, but you will not have a peace that is immune from the resumption of conflict. And I think that one of the worrying developments of the past several years is to look at the number of countries where, in fact, there have been rather an increase of levels of poverty, of desperation, combined with the fact that very conspicuous consumption by some has deepened the sense of frustration by others that feel they do not participate in this consuming society. And I think that's a very, very dangerous factor, and one that, in fact, bears the potential for a resumption of conflict.
Well, Jean Arnaud, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.